Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me today. 800-531-3815. Toll-free coast-to-coast. And my website is www.jbsba.com. And when you get there, you know what to do. You can listen to the show in three different ways online. You can read articles. You can find out more about our Brain Trust members. You can subscribe to my free newsletter. It comes every week by email. So check that out when you get a chance. The article this week, the feature article, is titled The Four Levels of Consciousness. So check that out, and you still got time to get that article. Bill Dunkelberg is our guest. William Dunkelberg is Chief Economist for the National Federation of Independent Business and a professor at Temple University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He's our good friend. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Jim. How are you doing this morning?
Doing great. It's good to have you back. Folks,
Thank you.
As you remember, I told you early in the hour, and I reminded you of something you probably already know, and that is that for a long time now, for a few years, Bill Dunkelberg has been polling small business owners around the country about what they find, what they're finding out there, what's going on in the economy, what's happening in their businesses, what are they happy about, what are they excited about, what keeps them up at night, what frightens them, and he's back with another report, as we've been doing now for a number of years. Once a month, Bill tells us about what's going on. Bill, it looks like small business owners are still optimistic.
They are indeed. We had, of course, a little back down from the great August number we had, but it's hard to set new records, and that was the highest reading we've had on the Optimism Index in the monthly surveys, which go back to 1986. So we were getting it to back down a little, but it still looks very good.
Must have been the fair.
Yeah, it's hard to say exactly what it was.
I don't know if you know about that, but in a lot of the parts of the country, September is fair month. It's when, you know, the state fair and the county fair and all that.
Right, the Ionia Free Fair. I remember that in Michigan.
Yeah, and so, but what happens is in the week that the fair is in town, it hurts business, and so, you know, there's always this little excuse that goes around town that, you know, hey, how's things going? Well, we're not doing too good. You know, the fair's in town. So the only thing I can figure out is what happened in September is the fair was in town.
That could be, although I keep thinking I've seasonally adjusted the data, and if that happens every September, I should have taken it out of the numbers, so to speak, but you never know.
Well, you know, I'll help you whenever I can, you know, to improve your process there, Bill.
Yeah, we'll take it.
Well, you know, there's actually a list of things. I saw one time about all the different excuses that you can make in any given month or week about, you know, why you couldn't get the sale.
What we should do? We should get together and publish the book of excuses.
There you go. Yeah, you know, there's back to school, and there's you know, nobody's doing anything because it's Christmas, and of course in the summertime, you know, everybody's on vacation, so we can't sell anything while people are on vacation.
And the dog ate the homework.
Yeah, all the holidays. Yeah, exactly. There's always excuses. Well, what are some specifics that they told you? What about their hiring plans? You know, we need more people to be going to work, and we need to be hiring folks. Are small business owners hiring?
Well, they're going to hire, but the numbers slipped from the August survey to the September survey. We're down to a net 10% of all owners planning to expand total employment. Now, 50% are hiring, but a lot of that's just replacement demand. So expanding total employment only 10%, down from 14% in August. Compared to the 1990s, it's kind of a weak number, although very interestingly, it's a very strong number when you look at the 1980s expansion, which, of course, was a great job-generating expansion.
Right. Did you see the Wall Street Journal report yesterday, I think it was, that manufacturing jobs are off worldwide because of technology? Did you see that?
Right. Well, that's going to be the case. Again, my favorite example is to look at agriculture here in this country. 50 years ago, we had 11 million people working in agriculture. And that's 50 years ago. So today we have 2 million. Think of how much bigger the economy is. And these 2 million people still make too much stuff. It's all about productivity. It always happens. The same thing is happening in manufacturing. You know, we need fewer workers in the plant, and that trend will continue.
Well, exactly. And see, that's the reason why I think it's unproductive of us to blame politicians when people don't have jobs, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, because it's not a most of this is not a anything politicians have any control over. In fact, this report, Bill, said that in China, manufacturing jobs were being lost because of productivity, because of technology, even in China. And that's where that's the continent of last resort, so to speak, for manufacturing jobs. I mean, that's the last bastion of cheap labor anymore in the world, and even they're losing jobs. Because
that is true, because they're getting a new equipment, new technology, new knowledge. All those things make output per worker rise in the long run. And, of course, that's what we want, because the only way we can be richer people around the world
Bill,
is to make
more excuse me.
Per
Hang
hour.
On. We take
so we have to do that.
We got to take a quick break. Stand by, folks. We'll be right back. It's 22. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend Bill Dunkelberg, Chief Economist for the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business. Don't forget their website is nfib.com. Bill, even though optimism is up, it seems to be strong among small business owners. We got a couple of negatives here. As we said, the hiring plans are down a little bit. Capital spending is off a little bit.
Well, the plans are off a little bit, but we did notice another increase of a couple of percentage points in the percent of owners who actually made outlays in the trailing six-month period. So even though they're not telling us that they're rushing ahead to make these outlays, for the past 6 months, the percentage actually making them keeps growing. So I guess the real issue is, you know, are they actually spending? And so far that looks good, even if they don't want to tell us that they plan on doing that over the next 3 months.
What are your people telling you? Are you polling them at all about how they feel about the direct expensing increase that they got this year by being able to expense up to $100,000 of capital items this year? Have they commented on that at all?
Well, we haven't asked any specific questions about that. We certainly expect it to help increase spending, and that may be why we're seeing an increase in actual spending reports, even though plans don't go anywhere. They're all looking at it and saying, well, I've got the freebie for now. I'll go ahead and take this tax break that I have, even though I don't have any real major plans to go out and make a lot of capital outlays. And so they're buying more stuff, but they're still waiting to see the economy really take off before they add that capacity.
Right. You know, Bill, people ask me whether the direct expensing was that big a deal for small businesses. And, of course, a lot of small businesses every small business was already getting $25,000 of direct expensing rather than depreciation over a period of years. They were already getting $25,000 direct expensing, and it went up to $100,000. And whenever they asked me, was that a big deal, I said, well, you know, a lot of small businesses don't need $100,000 in write-off, but if the average for the 20 million or so small businesses that are out there was only $3,000 more because of the tax advantages, that's $60 billion in sales, Bill.
That's a lot of cash flow for the firm. I mean, eventually you're going to write this item off anyway. So really it comes down to, do I write it off, say, 100% this year, or do I get 3 years to write it off or whatever? So it's going to be expensed. So it really moves, if you will, profits around in time. And what this bill does, of course, is accelerate them from the future into this period, which hopefully will spur some capital spending and some hiring, and I'm sure it's going to do that. I'm sure it is doing that.
Exactly. And the other thing is, as you know, a lot of technology is obsolete before we get it depreciated anyway with the old schedules.
Absolutely. If you ask yourself what kind of capital expenditures are service sector firms making, where there's a lot of capital spending, it has to be technology.
Right.
You know, they're not buying dump trucks.
Right. That's exactly right. Okay, what are some of the other things that your folks told you?
Well, we still saw that plans to add to inventories are pretty strong historically, and that's good. We think the inventory sales ratio for the economy and for small businesses must be low. The shelves are pretty empty, so that's good for the manufacturing firms that will be getting the orders.
Right.
The capital spending plans, we say, weakened, but they're still okay. What did stay really strong, of course, is optimism about the future. We had 43% of our owners, net of the pessimists, tell us that the economy will be better in 6 months. And every time that's happened, we've seen the economy take off and have a nice run. So we go back to 74.5 or 83 or 91, 92. When we get up to this level, the economy has always taken off in the past. So I think we're ready to go again.
Well, I think so, too. And of course, every time they revise a recent quarter's performance, you know, whenever we've had a little more time to look at a quarter's performance over the last couple, they've been revising them upward, haven't they?
Absolutely. The numbers are all headed in the right direction. And, of course, the tentative numbers for third quarter are making it look like we'll see real GDP growth somewhere between 5 and 6.5%. And that's, of course, just about fast enough to get some job creating done, and that's what we're looking forward to.
That's the good news. The bad news is those kinds of numbers make the Fed really jumpy, don't they?
It does, and of course that's what the Fed hopes is going to be happening. They promised us they're not going to raise rates for a while, so you've got this kind of window of opportunity here where the Fed is committed not to rush in to rate hikes, even though the economy takes off, and we'll see what happens.
Did we get that in writing, Bill?
Well, it's written down enough places, I guess, in speeches and on the part of the press, so that credibility will be the determinant here. Well, they'll sit back and make sure this thing is really rolling before the discount rate goes up again. Now, long-term rates may go up anyway, so it may be a moot point because none of us borrows at the discount rate.
Right, exactly. Well, I'd like to get those affidavits, if we could. Next time they say that, let's get them to sign on the dotted line. But you know, hopefully this time, Bill, the Fed will say, you know, in the 90s, we didn't believe, in 1999, we didn't believe that we could have productivity and healthy growth. We were convinced, this is the Fed saying this, we were convinced that those kinds of growth numbers would do nothing but cause inflation. Now, I think that, they've got a little bit of a different attitude about that. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I think that they noticed there was a new world. We were, you know, we used to model the world using the old 1% population growth, 2% productivity growth, so you could have real GDP growth 3% with no inflation. Well, now we've seen we can grow 7 or 8% and have prices falling. So
yes.
I guess we really had to change our way of thinking about the productivity kind of question and the equation and what's happening today.
Well, I was saying to the Fed back in those days, you guys need some new models. And in my own dangerous amateur way, it turns out I was right. And
Models always are based on history, unfortunately.
That's exactly right. Stand by, Bill. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We'll be right back with Bill Dunkelberg, Chief Economist for the National Federation of Independent Business. It's 10 till. Stay with us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're looking at some of the things with our good friend Bill Dunkelberg, some of the things small business owners have told him in the last 30 days or so about what's going on in their lives, what's keeping them up at night, what makes them excited. And in terms of the things that are really on their radar screen, Bill, the list hasn't changed in terms of the priorities, I don't think, right? Insurance is still tops on the list of things that wake them up at night.
Number one, insurance, the rising cost of insurance and its availability, 24% say that's the most important problem facing their business today, which, I mean, that pushes aside a lot of other problems, you know, to get to first place. It's going up fast, and it's just like a tax on the bottom line because you're paying a lot more money and you're getting, at best, the same product, maybe a degraded product even.
Well, and you know another thing that's happening, Bill, I think I read something recently that pointed to the effects of benefits on the hiring process and how much people will it'll cause them to seek technology solutions rather than human solutions, because you don't have to buy health insurance for a computer, but you do for a person. And
And, that's right, and you know, machines don't take coffee breaks. That's good.
That's right, and so that's contributing.
However, you know, it's hard to do that in the service sector. It's very labor intensive, and if you look at employment growth in the healthcare industry, it's very strong. It's been very strong, and it's a people intensive business. So there's not much they can do.
But it does seem that the insurance expenses are leveling off. They're not going to be. It looks like maybe they're not going to be in the double digits for another year. Is that right?
That's right. It looks like next year they'll slow down to, the 5% range. Still a big increase when inflation's under 2.
Right.
But certainly a lot better than the double digit range we've seen. Now the insurance companies did have a lot of problems, a lot of losses, the terrorism, the weather, a lot of their reserves were in the stock market, and so their reserves went down. And the regulators make them keep, a certain amount of money on hand to handle disasters. And so this is a rebuilding year for reserves. And, of course, it gets rebuilt at our expense. There's no other way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Another thing, the third thing on their list of things that kept them up at night was poor sales. Now, do you think that that's going to be a short-lived concern over the next 6 months or so?
Well, I really don't, because... And it's not because sales are going to be poor, but because, again, sales are P times Q, price times quantity. And when you're not raising prices or even cutting prices, sales can be going nowhere in dollar terms, even though business is really good. And we're not used to that yet. I noticed that the retail sales in 1999 were up 6%, nearly 7% at an annual rate. And then the next 3 years, they were up only 3%. Now, everybody said that was a lousy Christmas season. Well, I'm not sure it was. Each of those was a record again, a new record. And the problem was there was a huge amount of price cutting going on. So the real output was big, and lots of stuff got sold.
The units the unit numbers were up, but the...
Yeah, everybody felt like, their retail, they're used to 6% growth in sales. Now they're only getting 3, so it's not good. So... part of that is just getting over the psychology of having your prices not going up along with the output.
We haven't had any pricing power in a long time, and Bill, I think what you're alluding to, and I agree with you, is that's a condition that we're going to be living with for a while, isn't it?
That's right, and actually you can make money, with or without price increases. In the long run, you can only make money by being more efficient. You really can't, for any period of time, make money by just charging your customers more. Competition won't allow that. So in an environment where the Fed is keeping the average price level down, then, of course, we can't go anywhere with prices. But it really lays bare what business is all about, and that's getting better and more efficient every year in what you do.
Well, one of the things that there actually is good news here for small business, Bill, because the way to raise your volume and it's certainly your profit margin, your gross profit margin, is to give customers what they want, not what they need. Let the big companies give people what they need. You give them what they want, which includes saving them time. And nobody does that better than small business owners, Bill, and you know that, don't you?
That's what it's all about.
And if we can focus on that, that's where your margin opportunity is, folks. It's not in giving people commodities. It's giving them customization and saving them time. I think that's where the margin opportunities are, Bill.
Yeah, and that's the service sector, and that's where, the small business shines in that business. We're very good at it.
No question about it. Bill Dunkelberg, thank you very much for being here. Good job today, and we'll see you next time.
My pleasure.
Bill Dunkelberg, ladies and gentlemen, William Dunkelberg, chief economist with the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business. He'll be back. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.